Hi, welcome to The Left Brain Artist. On this podcast, I will interview an artist and we will talk about their artwork, their techniques, and their business. I've chosen artists you may not be familiar with, but it's my hope that after this, you will look up their website and check out their art. We'll delve into the left side of our brains to find out how these artistic people find venues for their art. How do they find buyers for their art? And how do they get teaching opportunities? And also, how do they keep track of their inventory, their finances, and all the events that they show? Today's artist is Bobbin Salisbury. She's a watercolor artist from Boynton Beach, Florida. She talks about how she decided to pursue watercolor. She talks about how she frames her watercolors, and she also talks about the benefits of joining artist group. She's also taken on teaching and is currently developing a children's book. This is Bobbin Salisbury. All right, so Bobbin, first of all, can you tell me about your name and why sometimes people see your name as Marilyn and sometimes people see it as Bobbin?
Well, my dad named me Bobbin because I was named after my mother, who was Marilyn, and it was a little confusing in the family, and I was just bobbing around in the playpen, and they called them playpens in those days. So it stuck. And
I
my
love
first,
it.
First piece of artwork, I signed Bobbin, so I signed them all Bobbin. But my legal name on a check is Marilyn. So.
Okay. All right. So when people look for your artwork, you call your website Bobbin's Artwork.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's where people will find you.
Yes.
Why don't you start by telling me about when you first started doing art? How old were you and where was this? Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in New York on Long Island in a place called Levittown, which some people will recognize. I started when I was a little kid and just, you know, crayons, paper, coloring books, paper dolls. I used to make my own whatever. I was like a creative kid, I guess. And I just kept up with it.
Were your parents creative? They must have encouraged you.
They did encourage me. My father was a woodworker. He worked with wood as a hobby. And my mom evidently did some fashion designing in high school, but never followed through. She played the piano, so I think that's where her creative bone was. So I don't really think that they were painters. But my father's brother was a fashion designer. And his name is Bert Geiger, and he's 95, and you can still find his stuff around.
That's great. Yeah. Did you do art when you were in high school?
Yes, I did. I took marketing and just general art, I think it was. I don't remember what it was called, but I think something about marketing, because I had to design album covers for records, and I had to design ads for newspapers, and that's what I remember. But you know, that was a few weeks ago when I was in high school.
Yes. Yes, when you were in high school, it wasn't the digital graphic design that people do. It was all just pencil and paper, pen and paper.
Exactly.
Right?
My favorite.
Then you moved on. Did you go to college?
I did.
When did you do more art?
I did I did art in college. I I took all my art classes there. I took figure drawing and printmaking, which I really liked printmaking, but it was messy. And you would get ink in your fingernails and you looked like you were a mechanic. And I was far from a mechanic. And to do it at home, you'd have to have a big press. And it just wasn't what would be good for me. So
right.
I went on and I took some classes in Molloy College. Part-time, and then I married and had a few children, like five.
5. That's a few.
Yeah. So they, you know, it took up a few minutes of my time every day.
Right. And you told me the story about how you were trying to make art in your house and you were using oil paints and it wasn't really working or fitting with children in the house.
No,
tell me about
not
that.
Not at all. My father as a boatman he would go out on the boat and the beaches and such, and he always brought home pieces of driftwood that he thought was interesting. Well, at the moment, or at the time, I should say, it was very avant-garde to be painting on this driftwood. So I got all these pieces of driftwood, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 pieces, and they were pretty big. I would say maybe, you know, they were like 6 inches wide and they were like maybe 30 inches tall. They were pretty big pieces. I don't know where he got them, but he did. And I painted oil boats, little boats on there with the sunset and flowers on some of them. And I used my oils that I had and I set them in the living room. And of course it was a Friday night. I had a minute. So I painted. The next morning I'm awakened by my 5-year-old, the second child, with her little 5-year-old finger full of oil paint saying, "Mommy, they're not dry." And what she had done is taken that little finger and gone through every painting to test to see if it was dry and ruined every one of them.
Oh, gosh, all that work.
So I tried acrylics. And if you know, if you're an oil painter, you know that acrylics don't have that same feel as the oil.
And yes.
I figured if I couldn't do oil, I still had to pull out everything for acrylics, even though it dried faster. I figured maybe I'll try watercolor and see if I liked it. And I fell in love with it. And boom, it dried. And immediately you could just pack it up in a little shoebox and we're done.
So it was well suited for the busy mom.
It worked well for mommy.
Did you take any watercolor classes when you first started with that?
I did. And I didn't find them very helpful because most of the classes that I took were at adult education, which happened at night. The teachers would be in there and they would say, "Okay, here's a picture of, you know, a snowball or whatever it was they wanted you to paint." And they would say, "Go ahead, paint it." Okay.
Yeah. I took an acrylic class like that too. Here's the photograph. First draw it with pencil and then paint it. And that was the extent of my instruction.
Yeah,
it was crazy. And I kept going to the next classes thinking, well, maybe this will be the class when they'll actually tell me what to do. And they never did.
No,
yeah, it was frustrating.
It was very frustrating. And that was all in New York. When I moved to Florida, I found the Armory and I went and took some classes at the Armory. It was totally different.
Totally different.
So they had instructors in there and they instructed, you know, which was really.
Imagine.
That's what you're looking for if you're a student, you know. So years later, when I became a teacher and I started teaching, it was like, I'm never going to do that to these people or students of mine because that was so upsetting. You know, I'm sure it wasn't much money at that point, but it was money you're investing in your art and you'd.
Right. And time.
You know, and nothing.
Yeah.
So that's real important to me to give structure to a class so that students know what they're up against.
Yeah, that's great. So that's the Armory Arts Center, which is in West Palm Beach, Florida. At what point in your life did you move to Florida? So you were a mom, you were raising 5 children, you had your own career, your own day job and full-time job with the kids. And then you moved to Florida.
I moved to Florida in, I think it was 78. I only had 2 children, but I was 9 months pregnant with the third one when I moved to Florida.
Okay.
And, art is really what kept me going because I knew nobody, you know, nobody. And then I found the Armory and made some friends and things like that. So, but it was still, the art was really part-time because there wasn't time. And then, of course, 2 more children came.
Right. And were you selling any of your artwork during this time period?
I think I was. I did find I was making mats, which looked like frames, out of gingham. on, like, well, I don't know what it was called then, but it's the foam core now. It's to cover the frame, the mats. And I would do little pictures in there of little Bo Peep or, you know, a little poem or, you know, Mother Goose. Mm-hmm. And I would sell those. And that petered out. So Peter Cottontail was not where I was going.
Okay, so you talked about, so you're making watercolors, and was it much later when you first started teaching other artists?
Yes, because I didn't feel that my art at that point was really worth anything for anybody to purchase, let alone to see. I thought it was a very personal, private thing. I didn't start showing my art maybe until maybe 15, 20 years ago. So.
Oh, okay. Kids were older and
once the kids were out of the house and, I think I took a class down in, the Boca Museum. I was so impressed with the teacher, Roz Kirsch, and she's passed on, but she was just a fabulous teacher and instructor. Mm-hmm. I was so impressed that I would bring my homework into work where I worked in retail. And the girls were all, and the guys were like, so impressed. I thought, well, maybe I do have some talent here or some. One of the girls said, can you make me a magnolia? And she wanted a giant magnolia. And I said, okay. And I was like, when I went home, I said, what did I say okay to? I don't even know. You know. But I did it, and she loved it, and she purchased it. And I always think of Barbara whenever somebody asks me to paint something, because she started it. And she, you know, and the girls at work, you know, they encouraged me enough that I felt confident enough to show my work. And that's when I became serious in looking for outlets to show my work.
Oh, okay. So it was the first commission where you realized you really have something, and it wasn't just the personal artwork for you anymore. It was something that other people would enjoy having in their own homes.
It was very exciting. And you don't expect that, you know, I didn't expect that.
Yes, but you did many years of honing your art before that came to that point. So I'm sure the arts that you were doing outside of college and first doing on the driftwood was very different than the art you were doing so many years later.
And that's right. Like I tell any of the students, it's, you know, it's like anything else. If you want to get good at it, you have to practice and practice and practice.
And I think that that's something that I've always admired about you. You seem prolific. So you're always painting, because you do post them on Facebook when you finish something, or even if it's work in progress. And I remember you posted something and you said, what does this need? It needs something. You seem to be painting all the time. And it seems that you've also developed a knack for making art when you travel. So tell me a little bit about that, how you fit in still making a lot of artwork when you're on vacation in the Keys, or you recently went to North Carolina to see your grandchildren. What are you bringing with you, and how are you making the time to do the art?
Well,
when you're
traveling? Well, I think it really started when I was still working. You know, so I was working and I go on vacation, and that's what I wanted to do. Gary wanted to do vacation things, and I wanted to go paint somewhere quiet and peaceful and wonderful. So we compromised, and, you know, I would have a couple of days that I would just paint. Or if it was a rainy day, I got the whole day. So I take a smaller palette. It started out with, this is, you're going to laugh, the little pill cases that come for 7 days.
So
I would carry three, a red one with all the reds and a yellow one and a blue one. And then I branched out to green and purple. So I had all my colors in there. And I would take a small pad and a couple of brushes, and that would go in the suitcase first. And there was always time. You know, Gary likes to watch football if there was and golf, and if there was any game on, he would watch the game, and I would sit outside on the patio or wherever at the beach and paint at the beach and just be in my own little world. And I've made a lot of friends doing that. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, I can see that. It's definitely a conversation starter when you're outside painting what you see, painting the nature. And I think it's funny where you talked about your dad giving you the driftwood and you painting the boats because he was a boatman and that's what was around you. And I've known you as a painter of boat. Today, you're still doing boats because you go on these, you go on vacations to the Keys and other tropical areas and living in Florida. I didn't realize you've been painting boats your whole life.
In high school, not to revert back, but in high school, my senior year, there was a contest to paint or do something for the district's calendar for the next year. So after I graduated, I won. One of my boats was on the calendar for the whole district. So I've had little good things happen. I had a couple of things happen in college too with my figure paintings. I won some awards in college. So, you know, and now I'm talking again with a big ribbon on my waterfall.
Yeah, tell me about that one. That was recently you won an award for
yes,
a show that you
and
to.
I was totally shocked because it was last minute. I was going to do it and then I wasn't going to do it. And then one of my students said, well, I think I want to do it. And I said to myself, well, if I don't do it, she won't do it. And I said, you know, it's an awful lot of work for me. And she said, well, if you're not doing it, I'm not doing it. I said, okay, I'm doing it. So we did it. And she's right at the level now where she needs to see her art amongst other art. But she still needs, you know, she's still ready for, you know, instruction. We dropped it all off and it was in Carl Springs, so it's a ride. And that night I get a phone call from the president of the Palm Beach Watercolor Society. And I think, oh my goodness, I must have forgotten to put the tape on the wire or something fell off and she doesn't know the name of it. You know, of course, I never thought anything positive. And she said, I should tell you that you won an award. I won. I was like in total shock. And she says, and the funny thing is, I wasn't going to put this painting in. And the one I wanted to put in didn't have plexiglass on it. And so I couldn't put it in. And I didn't have time to redo the frame. So I said, oh, I'll just put it in there. And here it is. I had the waterfall and I had the blue daisies. And I said, well, which one won? And she said, the waterfall. And I said, you're kidding.
That's great.
And what was really nice is, you know, I've had awards on and off, but this one came with money. And I was like in shock.
Oh.
Who knew,
bonus.
Right? I was happy with the ribbon.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to just talk about one thing that you mentioned, but that's just great. Congratulations. You mentioned that you wanted to maybe enter a different one, but it didn't have plexiglass. And the watercolors, you always want to put some kind of glass over it for protection.
Yeah.
That's correct?
And
okay.
Just to put in a little tidbit, you need to put it in a mat. And if you don't put it in a mat, it has to have little, and I think they call them sliders.
Spacers?
So it doesn't touch the glass. Or the plexiglass.
Okay. All right. Okay, that makes sense. And the reason that public spaces, when they're displaying artwork, why they don't want real glass and they want something acrylic like plexiglass, which is a brand name of an acrylic, is just for the liability. If it falls off the wall and the glass breaks and it hurts somebody. And so that's something you've learned just from doing this for a while, that there are certain requirements. And when you're entering a show, you have to abide by their requirements. So if they say no glass, you're just going to be rejected outright if it's glass. Or if they don't realize it and you're accepted and then you go to deliver the artwork and that's when they realize
out.
It, you'll have to do that walk of shame and bring it home because they can't use it. Right. That's just a business a business thing that you've learned from entering shows. Right. How did you first find out about shows or contests, things to...
I went online when, you know, and I found the, you know, the Palm Beach Watercolor Society. I found the Gold Coast Society. I found a bunch of things. And of course, I didn't think I was good enough to, you know, enter.
I know it's silly, but every artist thinks like that.
You know, how could they accept me even into the society and then to be able to be accepted into their shows was just fabulous for me. So, but I did that online. Yeah. And then, of course, you meet people, other people that are students, and they'll say, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and you investigate and, you know, you become aware of things. And it's, you have to keep your feelers out, you know, even if you're an artist and you're in your little studio or your little art world. You still need to keep your feelers out and, you know, go online and see what's happening and check out the people's artwork out too.
Mm-hmm. And when you join a local organization like the Palm Beach Watercolor Society, and I know you're also a member of the Wellington Art Society, which is another city in Palm Beach County, that's where you're meeting other people. And that's where you're doing the little chit-chat and finding, well, where do you show your artwork? Well, where have you had success? Where have you shown your artwork and actually sold some artwork? So can you tell me about what it's like to be a member of a group like this, and what are the other benefits besides just the social aspect of getting to know more people and not being such an isolated artist at home alone in your house? What else do you get from joining a group like that?
Well, the big pull for me was the fact that every time you go to any meeting, any art meeting, they always have some kind of demonstration. And for me, usually it's a big known artist, whether it's an artist from our group or that has published their work in a magazine, or they do workshops all over the world. They are pretty experienced artists. And you learn something from everyone, whether it's the brand they use or the brush they use or the paper they like the best or why they make six strokes on the whatever that they're doing. In each show, in each meeting, there's always some other information that they give you.
Right. Telling you about an upcoming show.
So I like the fact that the Palm Beach Watercolor Society has paint-ins in the where we have our meetings in the Boca Community Center every second Tuesday or something. I'd have to be sure to check on that. Don't count that as the word of God. But they have where you can go, and as a member, it's free, and you paint. There's a model. You can paint the model, or you don't have to paint the model. You can paint whatever you want, but you paint with other people, and it's a very fun atmosphere as well. So
yeah, I like that, and I know the Wellington Art Society. They did a plein air day a couple months ago, where everybody just whoever wanted to participate. You could set up your paints outside, and some people just use pencil and paper. I think one person was using pastels. So you do whatever your medium is. I went to that meeting. I didn't bring any paint, but I wrote a poem based on the scene. I don't know if I ever showed you that, but I did. Yeah. Well, and my goal was always to then come home and make a painting to match the poem and the scene that I saw. Of course, I haven't done the painting yet, but it was a good poem. You know, what I found going to these meetings and joining these groups is that the demos, even if it's a medium or a topic that you don't necessarily do, you still get something out of it. So if you're a jewelry artist, but it's a painter and the painter is talking about finding shows or how does she keep track of her sales, or how does she actually do her sales when she's outside in a tent in the grass and doesn't necessarily have an outlet and plugging in? How do you do this? You can learn these things by going to these demos. So I like joining the local groups too. I think that's loads of fun. Let me talk about you started doing shows. You started doing the traditional outdoor show with a tent. You've done indoor thing. Do you enjoy that? Do you get sales? Are they all different?
Well,
how do you like those?
Pretty much they are all different. I personally, because of my age, I think, I like to have indoor shows because it's not as strenuous with the heat, to sit all day in the heat, eat your little tent.
Right.
Pretty much I've sold in everything that I've gone to. I like the indoor because of the air conditioning,
great.
And you don't have to set up a tent.
Mm-hmm.
But the tent setup is a big deal, and I can't do it by myself, which annoys me that I can't, that I need somebody to help me. So sometimes that puts a damper on things for me. I may not be able to do it if my husband mm-hmm. can't get, he's still works full time. So if he can't get off or somebody in the family can't help me out, then I can't, you know, those dates, whatever they might be, I won't be able to do it. And, but I enjoy it.
Yeah, that's understandable.
I enjoy it a lot.
Yeah, because you get to meet the customers, the potential customers. They're coming right up to your booth. I always think that's
yes.
fun, getting to talk to people. But it is hard. The Wellington Art Society 1 year had an opportunity for their members where they rented tents. So all you had to do was sign up for it, and the rental company came and set up your tent for you. And you just showed up with all of your – then, you had to set up your easels, your walls, yeah. your racks, whatever you're using to display your art. But that was mm-hmm. – that's how I did my first show when I was selling my jewelry, is they had a rental company that set up the tent, and I just paid for the rental of the tent. And that was a great way for me to get my feet wet. I also shared the tent with another artist, so I wasn't committed to filling an entire
yeah.
10 by 10
yeah.
foot tent full of
yeah.
jewelry when I first did it. But I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't joined the
right.
Art Society, the Wellington Art Society. And that's how I learned this type. I want to talk some more about your artwork, and can you tell me the story about your lobster trap frames that you do, and they look so good with your watercolors. How did that come about that you started doing
it? Was hysterical, really. My son-in-law, the one in North Carolina, before he moved, he knew he has a friend in the Keys, and he would go down lobstering with his friend. And he said, called me up. He said, "If I get you some lobster trap wood, can you make some frames?" And I said, I don't really know, but I'll try. You know, I'm always ready for a challenge. So he put up, I don't know, it was about.
Right.
I don't know, maybe that's a lot of wood. He brought me a lot of wood. Well, I don't know how to make frames. And my father and I sat down in the afternoon one day, and we were just kind of like stapling them, you know, with those big staples and wood together. And then
yeah.
I put a picture in there, and I used a little of the plexiglass. And then I put my art in, and then I put a piece of board on the back, and I would, you know, thumbtack it into the wood. Those were my first frames, my first lobster trap frames. I have one
okay.
left, only because I wouldn't sell it, because I wanted to have one. Yes, that I put
you
together.
Made yourself.
And it was like, you know, this is really not what I want to do, is spend my time making frames. So I told John, and he said, "Well, you know, the guy that gets me the frames has been a cabinet maker for years. Maybe he'll make the frames." So blah, blah, back and forth. And yeah, he made these frames. They're fabulous frames. In fact, my son-in-law says, "Do you have another one? Because I need one. Can you send it up?"
Everybody
yeah.
wants
yeah.
one of your artwork
so,
in the frames. Yeah.
So he makes the frames. I call him. I tell him I need blah, blah, and he brings them up. And we meet at Cracker Barrel, and he gives me a list of how many he gave me, and I give him money for the ones I sold. And, you know, it's like on a commission type thing, you know, not commission, consignment. So I sell them, I give him the money. And mm-hmm. it seems that maybe I just didn't do it fast enough, because it seems now that there are lots of trap frames all over the place. And yes,
oh,
and they're not
copiers, huh?
not done as well as Big, we call them Big John. They're not done as well as Big John does, and they're selling them way cheaper. It's kind of like dwindled down a lot. I put my original artwork
okay.
in there, and then the price goes up even higher. So it's been difficult to sell recently. When I first started it, boom, 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 they were going out like hotcakes, but it's kind of dwindled away.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you try something else. So tell me about the teaching. When did you start teaching artwork, and what are the venues? Where
well,
are you
there
finding
was a little
students?
Shop called Artancy Living, and she's still in business, I believe. And she said, one day I was in and out with my artwork. I was selling my art there in her shop. And she said, do you think you can help me out? I had a watercolor teacher and she just quit because one of the students liked what she was doing. And I said, well, what was she doing? And she said, nothing. She would come in with the, and here we go again. She would come in with the painting and say, paint this. And the students were like, are you kidding? So I said, well, I could try. And that's how it started.
That's how it happened. Right. It sounds like you're very brave to try anything. And that's why you're successful in your business. So that was a retail shop that also held was selling your artwork. I taught at people's homes.
I do. I teach at my house, usually on Thursday. But now season is over. So usually in the summer, I don't have as many people coming to my house because I used to have like 8 people coming, but it's dwindled a little bit.
Oh, great.
People come and go, you know, or they don't come down for season, but they're mostly seasonal people. But I have 2 disabled people that I go to their homes. One's in Lake Worth and one's in Boca. And I'm very attached to them now.
Okay.
One can't paint too well, but she's tries so hard. I just love her to death, you know?
That's great. Well, you're encouraging your students to enter shows too.
I think so.
They must be learning something.
They don't think so. And that's when they start complaining, well, I didn't get it. I can't do it like you. I said, take out the first painting. Let's take out, I don't know where it is. I said, I have it on my phone and I look it up and I see, and I look at the one you did it in the beginning. And now look at the one you're doing now. Do you see a difference? Well, yeah. I said, well, there you go. Boom.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. So you've done, you're selling artwork, you're teaching, but you're also have written a book. You're working on a book that you've written and illustrated. So tell me about the book.
Oh, my book. I'm so excited about my book. My book started as a sketchbook from the Sketchbook Project, which is a traveling sketchbook program from the Brooklyn Art Library in New York that I think you told me about. Somebody told me that. I did.
Yeah, you wrote
that
book for the Sketchbook Project.
I was illustrating a book for another author in the summer, and my sketchbook was due.
That.
And I was having, I was getting palpitations because I didn't think I'd be able to manage everything and, blah, blah, blah. So my theme for the sketchbook was lines and borders. So I took a line and I drew a line through the whole book. One line, start to end. And
okay,
in each page had a design. Well, when I looked at it, it was the first 2 pages was silly Selma. She looked like a silly Selma girl with big glasses with diamonds on the side. She just
came
popped
out of the book.
And actually, that's the opposite way you're supposed to write a children's book, but So I did this. I refined it, because it was really like patterns in different shapes. And my grandchildren did understand it, but it wasn't what I thought a published children's book should look like. So revisions and revisions and revisions. And why is Silly Selma silly?
Okay.
So it's sad. And I started revising again. And then I was sending out query letters and getting nowhere. I mean, people would say, oh, it's very nice, but it's not for my publishing company or whatever, which I wasn't really discouraged about that because every author says, you have to get hundreds before you get the right one. So I figured it's okay. I'll be okay. I'll just keep doing it. And then my dad got sick for a while. So I had to kind of like be out of everything and take care of him on his feet. And, he's on his feet now at 94. He's on his feet quite a bit because he does dancing twice a week. Yes. So online again, looking up stuff, and I came across the, Storyteller Academy. and it was a little free webinar, and I looked at the free webinar, and at the end of the free webinar, and I've done a lot of these free webinars, and at the end, there's always that giant price tag mm-hmm. for the workshop, you know. Well, so right, this one was $300 for 12 mm-hmm. weeks. And once you became a member of the Storyteller Academy, you could take any of the classes over and over and over mm-hmm. again. So, but how okay. good is that? I mean, that's really great. 12 classes for $300. Mm-hmm. So I joined, and I have another class okay. tomorrow night. I think it's like almost to the end. We're getting to the end. But again, poor silly Selma got revised mm-hmm. I don't know how many more times. And I decided one of the purposes of going to North Carolina was when the kids go off to school and my two children, my daughter and son-in-law, they're working, I would have like 5 hours alone. So I could fix silly Selma. And I decided that the original Silly Sam, Why is Silly Selma Silly, is really three books. So I have to submit my latest revision, which is tonight. I have to do that tonight and see what the teacher says. He picks a couple of them and he goes over them over the, it's all on the internet too, on, you know. So, we'll see if he picks mine and see what he has to say. But when I signed up, I also got a one-on-one with him. So if he doesn't pick it, I'm going to have to do my one-on-one with him and see what he says. And hopefully it'll be, you know,
oh, good.
The right one.
Okay. And do you get feedback yes. from the other students
yes.
in the class?
Yes, this 12 weeks is every other week we meet with a critique group. And we all do this like Skype. And, we talk about the book and where we are on each other's books and what, you know, we talk about, you know, well, I think maybe if you put that first page as the second page, you know, or you have too many words there, and we encourage each other. And it's very, okay. it's a lot of fun to be able to be in the same position and have criticism that's not taken as, you know, it's good criticism, I should, you know. Right. And it's
right.
not like my
and
family.
And you're not being competitive.
Says, it's wonderful.
You're all trying
it's
to
wonderful.
Help each other.
I love it. Well, that doesn't help me. Do I need this word or not?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Your children will
yeah,
say, Mom,
exactly.
it's just great. It's amazing.
With that.
And of course, all your grandchildren love it too.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Is everybody in the class writing children's books?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, so that's good. It's targeted for exactly what you're trying to do. Well, that's great. Good luck with that. It sounds like you're a go-getter and you're learning about, you're creating your business by being fearless, not being afraid to just search out the answers when you don't have them yourself. Go and find other artists and go to meetings and go online and get your answers that way. I think that's wonderful. That's, you know, a lot of artists, they can't get past the, well, I've made a lot of art. I'm at home and I am hardworking and I've created a lot of art, and you know, it doesn't do any good if you've got a closet full of art and you can't get it out there, unless you just want to hang it on your own walls. But I think most artists want to get it out there. So, you've definitely learned the ropes by just trying a lot of different things. Yeah, that's great. So I think we'll wrap it up right now. Is there anything else that you want to talk about related to your business and how you've been handling making sales and getting your artwork seen?
One thing is you really need to keep your accounts separate from the family accounts.
Good idea. Yes. Okay.
And you should also have a good way of recording and keeping track of your artwork, where it is, you know, if you have 4 shows and you've got 6 paintings out there, where are they? You know, you need to know where they are, and you need to keep a good inventory list of what you have. And it's much easier when you can go to a book or you can go to the computer and look up, who's Barbara's Magnolia? Where is it? It's at the library. And how big is it? It's 48 by 32. And it's, you know.
And I've got another show coming up.
Yes, exactly. And you don't have to go and look under, you know, under the bed in the bin and yeah. take out 16 pages to see which painting you're and measure it again. You've got it all done and it's listed. So that way you're saving yourself time.
Yeah, very smart. Very smart. Yeah, you never know when you're going to get an opportunity. And the opportunity may simply be a phone call from somebody or running into somebody at an art reception. Hey, I'm putting on a small pop-up gallery. Do you have anything you can contribute? I need large pieces, things over 48 inches. And you say, right. Well, I think I have. Well, I'm not sure. Well, no, if you can look it up at your inventory, you can say, well, I have three pieces that are large enough. They'll be available on May 1st or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's how you can take advantage of these opportunities. So it sounds like you're very organized.
I try.
Yeah, you try. So where can people find you if they want to look at your artwork?
Yes, bobbinsartwork.com.
You have your own website?
I think it's a very nice website. Everybody should look up. And I have a lot of people say, I looked at your website, it's really nice, it's blah, blah, blah. And they don't put anything on the website. There's a whole place for comments. Please comment. Tell me, you know, maybe move this one to the left or whatever. But it'd be nice to get some feedback on the website, you know.
Maybe you can bring back to one of the meetings you go to and say, hey, can we critique each other's websites?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yes, yes.
Well, good. I'll put your website up in the show notes. So this was great. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. I enjoyed it. It's fun. I love talking about art. Well, you know, I love it.
Right.
You're yeah, welcome. Bye now.
All right. Thank you. That was a great interview with Bobbin. I want to talk about the takeaways from her interview. She had a lot of great information about her business. So number one, look for local art classes to expand your skills. Number two, seek out artist organizations. They'll help you with finding shows and getting tips on techniques and other business things when you meet other artists. Number three, search online for shows and contests. Number four, pursue other art-related projects like she's done writing and illustrating a children's book. Number five, keep your business finances separate from your family's finances. That's very important. And lastly, number six, keep a written inventory of your art so that at any time you know which pieces are available to show or to sell. So thank you for listening to the Left Brain Artist Podcast. I hope you enjoyed hearing Bobbin Salisbury talk about her artwork and business. I'm Suzanne Redman. See you next time.